can see in the run-up to this, the news of the summit came out about 3 weeks ago, and you've seen this sort of rash of decisions from leaders in the region to sort of show their fidelity to the U.S., so ending cooperation with Cuba, you know, and all sorts of other diplomatic decisions. We saw Honduras and Bolivia actually withdraw from the Hague Group, which was a diplomatic and institutional initiative to try and use international law to end the genocide in Gaza, in which a number of countries in Latin America have been a part of, including Colombia, Brazil, and Mexico, and Honduras and Bolivia under left-wing governments had also been a part of that. They both recently withdrew just in this last week, as the Hague Group is meeting with 40 countries to try and come up with an institutional response to this. And so you can see, again, how this is about, you know, using the hemisphere. And I think sort of ironically, right, much of international law and these concepts of sovereignty really came out of Latin American thinking, and the administration now sort of using that same region to undermine them globally.
And finally, Jake, U.S. commandos joining U.S. special forces in Ecuador, joining Ecuadorian commandos in this last 20 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, this is a hyper-militarized and overtly politicized remix of the war on drugs and the war on terror, right? Ecuador has been begging for the U.S. to get involved in that since Noboa took power. But this is not about drugs. This is not about terror. I mean, the U.S. pardoned Juan Orlando Hernandez, the convicted drug trafficking former president of Honduras, and Noboa in Ecuador, his own family has been accused of involvement in the drug trade. And so, look, this is about politics. This is about power. This is not about drugs, and this is not about democracy or anything else.
We want to thank you for being with us, Jake Johnston, Director of International Research at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. That does it for our show. I'm headed to Savannah, Georgia, where the award-winning documentary Steal the Story, Please, about 30 Years of Democracy Now! Will be at the Hindsight Film Festival at the Ben Tucker Theater at the Otis Johnson Cultural Arts Center. That's Saturday night at 7 p.m. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through our public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Genius Box. I'm Althea.
I'm Reed.
This is your Friday talk radio program. We're very pleased to be here with you this morning. How are you doing, Reed?
Pleased as a peach.
Pleased as a plum.
Pleased as a plum.
Any other stone fruits we can think of? Now would be the time to bring them up before we get into the headlines.
Stoned fruit.
Stoned fruit. Sure. And that's the subject of today's episode. It's all fruit related. We wanted to get a head start.
Cantaloupe.
On spring. Oh, hey, there you go. They don't have those. That's a melon.
Ugh. Does that fall into the fruit family?
I mean, it's a fruit. It's not a stone fruit.
Oh, I thought
I would
we
have
were
accepted.
I thought we were taking a more expansive definition
apricot?
Of fruit. Yeah.
Pluot.
Pluot.
Where are we at with pluots? I don't know. We'll see, I guess, come summertime. So tangential, and I promise we're going to get tell you what's
pluot.
Going on. One time I had a pluot from a farm stand that was called a flavor grenade.
Yeah. I don't think we should be naming those things that.
It was a little.
It's like falling in the territory of like those like IPAs where it's like, you know, I hate you IPA. It's like really, they're all really antagonistic or violent. Yeah. Or
it was,
it's like, you know, I think I just, all I want is to enjoy this thing. I don't need to like be doing like an aerial assault on my taste buds.
That's a good way of putting it. Okay, let's cover briefly the roadmap. Where are we going today? We are going to be talking about...
to the end of the hour.
To the end of the hour. We got 1 hour and we're going to make the most of it. We're talking about a nasty, sneaky gutting of Oregon's campaign finance regulations.
Public cowardice.
We're talking about PSEF, the Portland Clean Energy Fund.
Public cowardice.
Public cowardice again. We'll maybe get into some data center stuff. And by the halfway point, we'll open up the phones. We're talking about your favorite hour of the day, which we'll get into that. I know you have an opinion about this.
I know it's 8 to 9 a.m. Pacific Western Standard Time.
Yeah, actually, you do need to be specific about that part. Okay.
Except for those in Ontario, Oregon.
What are they doing?
I think they've aligned with the central, or with the, what is it, Mountain Time.
Oh, good for them. Or no?
No, sorry, it's good for them. I don't care. No. It can, you know.
It hurt your feelings.
Heck, it can be 2 p.m. right now for all I care.
Different strokes for different folks, they say. Okay. Anyway, campaign finance regulation. Ah!
We thought we had it, folks.
We thought we were on the right path,
and then...
You know it's bad when the Oregonian editorial board has come out with two scathing rebukes of what state legislators are up to.
Althea called me yesterday and she said, I agree with the Oregonian editorial board.
Oh, I did say that.
And I thought, huh, I didn't think
when it's I was not doing, all the time that I do.
When I was placing my bets this year, I didn't think that one of the bets I did not place was that Althea will agree with the Oregonian editorial board.
Well, when they're right, they're right.
And they rarely are.
Well,
in fact, this might really be
broken clock. Anyway.
Yeah.
But let's.
I don't think they've been right twice though.
They've written two editorials about this.
So they've been right twice, but on one issue.
Okay. Let's talk campaign finance. What's happening? We're in the short legislative session right now.
Blink and you miss it.
Also, it ends in 2 days. It's all high octane.
But we've had the time of our life. It's like summer camp.
I really doubt that any legislator in Salem
their tears away.
Would be saying that.
They're going to be writing hags on the yearbook.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
HB 4018 was put forward as just a simple one-pager bill talking about how the Secretary of State needs to study campaign finance. This is a whole other issue about how bills are put forward. But mere hours before the only public hearing on this bill, there was a 95-page amendment added.
Just a little amendment.
Just a minor amendment.
And I'm sure the original bill was probably pretty extensive, and so that 98 pages is like relatively small in size by comparison.
No, it's actually 95 times the size of the original page. But basically, it guts and delays campaign finance regulations, landmark campaign finance regulation for Oregon anyway, that was passed in 2024.
That is an important
damning with
clause.
Faint praise.
For Oregon.
For Oregon, asterisk, this was a big deal. Back in 2024, good government groups, including League of Women Voters, Honest Elections, Independent Party, the Green Party, all of these good government groups and third parties were working together to put together a ballot measure to put campaign finance regulations in front of voters. Oregon has some of the most expensive state-level races because we're one of only 5 states that doesn't have a state-level campaign contribution limit. So you can, and they do, go buck wild with how much money they spend.
You might not, but there are people that do. Yeah,
I don't have
a certain person that whose name begins with Phil and ends with Knight.
Yeah, and that could be anybody. But anyway, he's spending a lot of money on campaigns, and
so
is everybody.
Philworth McKnight.
Right. Expunge that person who you made up.
Just before you call in.
Don't. Okay. But anyway, they were working on this ballot measure in 2024, and they got instead made this trade basically with state legislators, with business groups, with unions. They had this big sort of like hammering out of some decent campaign finance regulation. Thank you. That would go into effect in January 2027, the first parts of it. Important things that it would add is contribution limits, different disclosure requirements, and a level of drill down in the disclosure. So a lot of times you see campaign ads that say that they're put forward by the Oregonians for a Bright Future or something like that. And it's like
the you just pretty much just can't disagree with me coalition.
I like what you like coalition. And that was DuPont. Oh, interesting. You know, there's levels
of Keeping Our Children Safe Coalition, sponsored by Raytheon.
Interesting. So basically the legislation would also, the law that is in place right now would require a level of drill down that you have to go a few layers. You can't just like create shell groups to hide where the money is coming from. So this is what the first part of this is scheduled to go into effect in 2027. You got Secretary of State Tobias Reid saying like, ooh, it's going to be so expensive and I don't want to do a big goof with our systems, with the computer systems of the state, which work so good. That's sarcasm. It often works bad. So there's that component of it, but this 95-page amendment, and then there's been added amendments, are like, it guts it. It kicks it further down the road. It adds loopholes that no other state has, which is interesting. And it was done completely in the dark, completely without any consultation of these good government groups that made this deal in 2024 to try to bring some semblance, to rein in any way, the campaign contributions. And but we have, I mean, the Oregonian editorial is called "Which Legislators Will Step Off the Gravy Train?" It's legislators, it's business groups. It was brought forward by House Speaker Julie Fahey. Is anybody willing to, if you're benefiting from the system, are you willing to break the system apart? And wouldn't you know it,
that's it would stand to reason that currently the answer is a resounding no.
Yep. So they've added new loopholes. The Campaign Legal Center put out this letter, and they were to try to talk about some of the loopholes that got punched in this bill.
And there are many.
There's
folks.
A lot.
I'm looking at a document that is 9 pages long, and the typeface is, I'm saying, probably a healthy like 6.
There's a lot of problems
of
with
business
this.
And labor lobbyists, stated rationale, and then let's say good government groups providing some additional context to those statements.
And yeah, it's not looking great. There was also some parliamentary maneuvers to try to keep this out of the hands of the Senate Rules Committee.
Right, you're saying it was in Ways and Means?
Yeah, it passed.
Even though it doesn't change the budget?
It passed from the House to the out of House rules, I believe, to the Senate Ways and Means, which, like, why would it go there? Because it doesn't have anything to do with revenue raising. But if it passed out of that committee, then it could go directly to the floor. So there'd be, like, a lot less opportunity to hammer things out. Of course, we are in the short session, which is super fast. There's not been really...
Lightning round.
There's been, like, no opportunity for meaningful public input on this because of the way that it was brought forward. I want to bring a couple of quotes from the Campaign Legal Center talking about this. There's a myriad ways that the bill seems to undermine the provisions to try to keep, like, it's just our campaign finance system is so messed up anyway, but basically, the way that it's structured now,
don't really have much of a campaign finance system,
at least
at the state level.
Well, and hey, don't forget about the national level.
Oh yeah, there's that one too.
We could talk about what we can control.
In Portland, they've implemented some campaign finance reforms.
Portland and Multnomah County have had successful ballot measures passed by Honest Elections, which is sort of they were architecting it off of that. Also, asterisk about the whole Tobias Reid, we have to spend $5 million to build a website thing. There was the nonprofit that runs the, I believe, the Multnomah County campaign contribution website was like, hey, we have one and we could do it for a lot less than that and it will work. They testified. So that was interesting too. But One of the things that the campaign finance system incentivizes right now is like, well, whatever group you have, you can only spend X amount of money. It's like, okay, great. Well, I'll just start another group. And so what it says in the law or the new amendment would basically gut any sort of prevention of that. Like, it's called an anti-proliferation provision. They were trying to limit the ability of, like, well, Reed and Althea say this, and then Reed and Althea group one also gets to do all of the expenditures that it wants to do. But it kind of like watered that down, made it so that it's easy to evade. The quote from the letter says, in other words, wealthy special interests could easily exploit this loophole by creating many entities with relatively trivial secondary purposes to multiply their contributions, rendering contribution limits illusory. I am not aware of any other jurisdiction that uses this sole purpose standard. Yeah, they made up a new standard. Yeah. So it's like, well, if we made Reed and Althea group one solely to dump more money into campaigns, well, that's illegal. But if it was also a social group,
yeah,
that had one meeting a year, you know, then that would not.
Famously, these stringent regulations often lead to people being able to actually, you know, pursue these people in court. You know, it's like civil rights laws where they say, you know, there must be like pervasive evidence,
right?
You know, like in Texas, they'll like require, you know, basically a public official to be like, I'm doing this because I'm racist.
Yeah, admit it on the record.
Otherwise, it will not.
Can you come up with any other
the standards?
Yeah. It's very limited. Another thing that they talk about is that I believe it removes. There's added loopholes around coordinated expenditures, and coordinated expenditures are basically. So they talk about independent expenditures, which is totally unregulated. Thank you, Citizens United, because it's free speech, and you get to put your money where you can talk about and put money on whatever you want.
Yeah.
Coordinated expenditures means you shouldn't be doing that in coordination with a candidate. Another quote from the article here. A campaign finance system that fails to cover coordinated expenditures as a form of contributions functionally has no contribution limits, because coordinating expenditures with a candidate is no different from writing that candidate a check. I am not aware of any other jurisdiction that has deleted a provision explicitly including coordinated expenditures as contributions in favor of implicit coverage elsewhere in the law. So it's weakened, it's bad, it's not good for anybody unless you're a giant labor union or you're a business group that wants to dump money into campaigns.
Or you're a candidate as well.
If you're a candidate that wants to go to fancy dinners, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing I saw as well was like within those amendments to the anti-proliferation law was the requirement that someone would have to file a complaint with the Secretary of State in order to, you know, enforce these anti-proliferation provisions.
Yeah.
So the Secretary of State can have all the information there and say, ooh, this violates the anti-proliferation provisions. Unfortunately, I can't do anything until someone tells me to do something.
Yeah. Just to, I also, the quote from the end of the most recent Oregonian editorial, quote, this is not a case where decision makers risk letting the perfect be the enemy of the good by voting no, because this bill does not come anywhere close to being good. Legislators should recognize HB 4018 will destroy public trust, not build it. They can prove their independence of that system that big money built by voting no. It's very strong language, I would say, about, you know, debate, because maybe there's some debate in there about kicking some of these requirements down the road, but it's not, I don't know. I interviewed Dan Meek from Honest Elections a week or so ago. You can find that on the KBOOT website on the News in Depth show. And that lengthening, like that long, long runway, it's not, I don't know that there's a lot of support for the idea that they couldn't get that going.
Mm-hmm.
Other jurisdictions have been able to turn it around way more quickly. I think Dan Meek was talking about whatever regulations were in place in the 90s, they turned it around in like 2 months, which granted things are a little different, but I'm stressed about this
campaign finance reform. That's just one of those big city things that just us simple small town Oregonians, we just don't need that kind of just I'm just trying to think of a good argument.
No, I don't think that's... I think everybody... We all need campaign finance regulation. Your voice matters so much less if we don't have it.
Really? You don't think that a couple friends and I can raise, I don't know, $6.8 million to...
If you could raise that amount of money, I would say, what are you keeping from me?
We're bringing... Well, the thing is that we make a mean cup of lemonade and people are paying the market rate, which is currently $500,000 a glass.
$500,000, and we use that to decide who's going to be the next governor.
We're using that. We're betting it.
We should have a conversation at some point about the betting markets, because I don't know if people know how buck wild that's gotten. Which I would wager that you could go on one of those websites and wager on whether or not this passes, which is sort of dystopian.
100%. Yeah. I've now wagered that you would bring up this fact that...
What were the odds?
The odds were 200,000 to one. I put down $50. I made...
You had inside information, though, because we had a conversation yesterday. This just in, we're pro insider trading.
I'm not... I mean...
Well,
I'm pro me.
I'm pro me doing it.
It just happens to be that in this situation, it is highly lucrative for myself.
Right, exactly. Well, I believe that is getting a vote in the next couple of days. That's HB 4018. We will see how it goes.
The Campaign Finance Reform Destruction Bill, they're calling it.
And so, yeah, let us know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, good or bad.
Good or bad, not having any kind of limitation on moneyed interests. Okay, shall we talk about, speaking of moneyed interests, the Portland Clean Energy Fund, an initiative to, so we've been following that the Portland Police Union and the guy that owns Big Pink want to take money from the Portland Clean Energy Fund, 25% of it in perpetuity, give it to the police union to hire more cops. They were in court.
We say, what is a green, equitable future?
Police usually wear blue, though. So maybe they would have to change that.
They'd probably
have to adopt
the park ranger uniform. Yeah. We say we could either spend this on, you know, like workforce development for green jobs and like historically marginalized communities, or we could pay for 300 new cops.
300 to 400 slash, I don't even think they put a number on how many
the sky's cops exactly. Althea, the sky's the limit.
We could, everybody in this city could be a cop.
Everyone in this city could become a cop. Yeah.
And isn't kind that of, the Portland we all dream
kind
of?
Kind of a Wild West style of just sort of...
I'm the sheriff. No, mm-hmm. I'm the sheriff.
This town is big enough for everyone to be a cop.
Yeah. New city slogan. The city that works, the city that where everybody works as a police
officer. We've put a 1% surcharge tax on national corporations, and in doing so, we've deputized every single person in this city.
That's the future that
walk
they want.
Around. You've got the big bandolier over your shoulder.
Yeah, we all have to wear spurs. It's actually really loud. Spurs. Anytime
it's
you
incredibly
go downtown.
Loud. All of the doors have been replaced with those clapboard.
Yeah. Yeah, anytime a wind rips through town.
Oy. Oh, man. Yeah. sounds like a murder of penguins.
Sounds like throwing multiple folding chairs down the stairs. Mm. Can you imagine that?
ASMR?
ASMR?
Nate, can we get that sound bite of a thousand folding chairs being thrown downstairs?
Nate's shaking his head. No. Nate's shaking his head. He's actually threatening to turn the mics off unless
Where's
we
our
get
Foley?
Back on track.
Do we have, can we get a Foley artist?
Guys, if you want to be our Foley artist, call in, please. 503-231-8187.
I guess we can just use PSEP funds for that because you can just use it for anything.
Yeah. Okay.
Anywho.
Let's get down to business. A Multnomah County judge made a ruling about this initiative petition that is going out. They have to get their signatures by July.
Mm-hmm. The Enhanced Community Safety Initiative sounds great.
Yep, it sounds good. Basically, it would take 25% of PSEP.
I'm sorry,
revenue.
And I also should say I've been, I think, justifiably criticized for my sarcasm. When I say that's great, it in the context of the show, it often means that's bad. So just a forewarning.
If you're ever unclear about where we're
ever unclear.
Okay. let's talk about this. Mm. The initiative petition got a little bit of a change. There was a typo that the judge pointed out. It is moving forward to try to collect signatures to put it on the November ballot. It wasn't a total win for the people trying to put this forward, the police union and the guy who owns Big Pink. But
Bob Simran and the former employee for Prosper Portland.
Former city council candidate Bob Simran was involved in this. They think that it's important to have more police. There's a lot of potential issues with this. Number one, they talk about the how many officers per capita compared to other state or
always,
other cities.
Always using that measure. Every other city has 2.4 police officers per 1,000 residents. We only have 1.3.
I'm shaking in my boots.
Yeah.
The International Association of Chiefs of Police, this is according to the Portland Mercury article on this, says that that's a, quote, totally inappropriate as a basis for staffing decisions, saying ready-made, universally applicable patrol staffing standards do not exist.
You could maybe, like, link it to, like, crime rates, which I guess, is our crime rate twice as bad as every other city and
it's actually
and surging?
Been going down, guys.
Okay, well,
interesting thing okay, about yikes. That.
Let's not use that measure.
Let's
think of another thing that
just,
we can
but
use.
But you can't dispute that there are this many people that live here and this many people that are hired. Something to note, every single year, the Portland Police Bureau is like, hey, we need to hire more police officers. Mm. And every single year, the Portland City Council is like, oh my God,
should we jump?
Let's just give you, here, take some more money. Take some more money. Why won't you take more money? And
they always say, it's just not quite enough. Can we have some from the parks?
Money, please. Money, please. Exactly. And so they've never been denied. There is no issue where there's some grand conspiracy that the city administration is depriving the Portland police of the money that they need to hire. Anytime the police ask for more money, they get more money.
The famous example of those $2 million that were quote unquote diverted away from the Portland police to parks was not, you know, like just part of their apportioned budget. It was in addition to the budget they already received. It was going to be used for, well, it was unclear what it was going to be used for, because then they asked Bob Day, police commissioner,
what do you need this for, by the way?
He goes,
I don't know,
but
it would have an impact. not making a whole lot of, it wasn't as compelling, say, as keeping the lights on in the park in the summer and then at night. But
he could have said, okay, well, we would use that to buy flashlights. Are you happy? Are you happy now?
With $2 million, we could buy a lot of flashlights.
Mind you, you know, the Portland police also has implemented a lot of very, you know, savvy cost-cutting measures. In addition to just getting free money, I was just reminded that they are the only public agency in Oregon whose pension is funded through Portlanders' property taxes and not through direct contributions from their employees or direct benefits from the agency themselves. Every other public agency pays into their pension system.
That's cool. So in a city that has really never denied their police anything, let's start there. The Portland Clean Energy Fund, which was passed by climate and racial justice groups in this town.
I believe to pay for more police, am I right?
No, actually, P is for Portland, not police.
Not police, okay.
To fund a green transition, to deal with the climate crisis, to invest in frontline communities, redlined communities who have been dealing with the effects of climate crisis already, to take those steps to get us off of fossil fuels. That's what PSEF is for. It's wildly successful. Wildly successful the way that they structured this tax, such that on a state level, they had to get rid of it.
That's a big problem. Possibly have a tax that surprisingly doesn't get passed down to consumers because it effectively taxes national products.
Yeah, it was actually so narrowly tailored to mega corporations that we had to, don't worry guys, the legislature got in there and they protected us.
Despite the, you know, people opposing PSEF successfully, I would say, like, animating small business owners in Portland also like minority small business owners who were falsely led to believe that they were supporting a different measure.
Oh, yeah.
Getting their quotes against PSEF. We were returning to that. That's an interesting...
It's just a bit ironic, and it's explicit. Like, to it's gross, it's racist to then have this successful fund that is doing what it said it would do, and then the police union and big money wants to get their little grubby hands on it to hire more police. Mind you, this is a police bureau that can't get out from a federal consent decree for using excessive force against people in mental distress. They were supposed to get out of it in 2021. What did the Portland police do all of 2020 and 2021? Oh, they were abusing protesters, protesting for Black Lives. Ah, let's write them a blank check. Let's take the money out of this fund and let's write them a blank check. Ugh. Sorry. That's my point, basically, is ugh.
Blech is right.
It's all... I don't know. Sorry.
A police oversight committee that was, you know, passed through by voter support and is now languishing due to
working their way, but it's like, it's tough.
Lack of members, lack of support. Mm-hmm. You would think, in the least, if the Portland police was trying to, say, garner some kind of public support with these added funds, they would be using some of them to, you know, at least like symbolically fund an attempt to, you know, show that they're funding their own oversight and their own attempts to get back under federal compliance.
Yeah. I mean, it is also
not true.
And everybody wants a piece of PSEF. Everybody wants a piece because it has outperformed what they thought it would.
That's a problem. It turns out it's a problem when we go through, like, you know, public austerity, when we're not able to fund our schools. But it's also a problem if we get too much money in the public sector, because, you know,
what happens then?
That leads to communism, I'm pretty sure, as I have come to understand.
Oh, that's what it is.
You start by investing in a green new future.
Yeah. And what's another color? Red.
There's like red is another color. That is true. Yeah.
Right there on the color wheel.
I will say maybe opponents have red, green color blindness in our...
That's interesting. Write that down. That might be something. Red, green color blindness. They've tried to say that PSEF is pushing corporations out of the city. They've tried to say that something like preschool for all, that tax structure at the county has... Dangerously has pushed wealthy people. They're fleeing Multnomah County. They don't want to live here anymore because there's way too much tax. Preliminary new data that came out recently shows that instead of there being less people paying the tax, there's actually 14% more people paid it in 2024
And these being people in the highest tax brackets, people are
high income
making over $250,000 or $500,000, I believe,
And also, by the way, we're Preschool for All is ahead of schedule. They're going to be able to offer to all preschoolers in Multnomah County before they promised. So that's interesting. But, you know, it's just...
Well, that's why no one wants to live here, Althea, is because we have fully funded preschools.
Yeah, gross.
Because we have, you know, $700 billion to invest in green infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
These are the kind of things, Althea, that scare away large businesses. They scare away our innovative class.
The rich. They're known for their innovations.
They're not...
Sorry, are we not calling them that?
They're rich with ideas.
like gutting PSEF, that's an idea.
Yeah, like diverting PSEF to police.
Oh, and you know what else? We could stop having campaign finance regulation. That might be one of their ideas.
Stopping all campaign finance regulation and really pretty much gutting just our tax system completely.
Yeah, hollowing it out. That sounds good. Well, hey, should we take a break? What do you say?
Oh, read. I don't know. I'm kind of liking this talk.
Read. Make a decision. Do we take a break?
I'm looking at my big giant clock.
Really,
okay, no, we can take a break.
We're going to take a little musical break. We're going to come back. The phone lines are going to be open, and we want to talk to you, so stay with us. And we're back here on Genius Box. I'm Althea.
I'm Reed.
back to it. A little bit of 52 Girls by the B-52s for you there. It is call-in question time. Your call-in question today, folks, is...
Which of us do you like better?
Actually do not answer that.
Okay.
Everybody's going to call in and say Nate because he's the one that answers the phone. He's upstream.
Yeah, or they'd be wise to say
they'd
Nate
be wise
or else you're
to
getting
say that
immediately
Nate is
hung up on.
No, our question today is a little bit silly, but guys, spring forward, daylight savings time is happening this weekend. Get ready. You're losing an hour. What is the best time of day?
Mm-hmm.
We want to know. So
down
to the minute, or you could just say the hour, 503-231-8187. You can also message us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. We've got Santiago on the line. Hi, Santiago. Good morning.
Good morning. So the best time is at nighttime because, as Ray Charles would say, nighttime is the right time to be with the one you love. So,
what hour specifically would you say?
Did Rachel say the hour?
What? When the sun goes down.
Yeah.
Okay. Right at dusk.
And also, as an addendum, we need to get rid of daylight savings time. It is archaic and nonsensical.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I've written a lot of essays about this as a child, and like nobody has responded.
Yeah. My favorite thing is that there's this. Native American, I can't remember who said it, but he said only the white man would think you could cut a quarter of an inch off the bottom of a blanket and sew it onto the top of a blanket and think you have a longer blanket. my favorite argument for no daylight savings time. But anyway, I was going to say on two things. Number one, the honest election thing. Like, I mean, it's a good step in the right direction, but the big problem is that as long as these capitalists still have a hold of their private property and their assets, it allows them to generate money at ungodly rates that, like, they are able to essentially wrestle back power from the people who... From the people who essentially make it possible for them to make that money. Because, you know, a lot of people, especially with Bernie Sanders around these days, and, you know, and kudos to him for finally breaking the social taboo on talking about socialism. Mm-hmm. But when he keeps talking about these social democracies, which they have outright said they are capitalist in character, we are starting to see that they're starting to be able to take back their power. And it's all because, like, even in those social democracies, the capitalists still hold all of the cards. It's just that there's a better bargaining aspect on their end. But as fascism has been taking hold, their power has grown immensely to the point where they're actually starting to able to gut the in their countries the hard won sort of amenities that they have been used to. So, I mean, not to say that we shouldn't work on honest elections. It's just we need to think further than simply just like these small little changes. We need to look bigger into that, which is my point on that. And then secondly, you know, the whole point of you, I guess it kind of piggybacks on what I was saying about like campaign finance or the honest elections or whatever. They don't want to improve things for the working class. The Portland Clean Energy Fund is a people's initiative, and it shows that, like you said, it's been wildly successful because it's been done on behalf of the people. When it comes to initiatives for much larger capitalist countries, they're all about kicking the can down the road. They don't want to see things improve. Every one of these cats are ideologically committed to making things fundamentally worse for the working class, only to the point where it's just outright. Although, as we're seeing with the fascist movement that's grown out of the moneyed class, you know, it's making it a lot more apparent that they're willing to go the extra mile. But even before that, I mean, they weren't really doing a whole lot. I mean, the fact that Oregon has got as far as it has just speaks to like the more progressive nature of the people of this city. But ultimately, it's always done with the ostensible pushback from the wealthy white enclaves that only exist at the expense of the people who make this city what it is. Hmm. So I don't know. Like, it's like I said, I'm, because you made a point there talking about how, you know, it's like they have this red green color blindness or whatever. But I mean, that's the real truth. I mean, I don't find it ironic that it is communism, because I mean, it's like, because communists and socialists actually care about living in tandem with the environment. Capitalists do not. Mm-hmm. They don't care. As long as their portfolios are increasing year over year, it doesn't matter how many cities they ruin, how many neighborhoods collapse, how many safety nets have to be burned, as long as they make their quota. Mm-hmm. And taking their money that was made at the expense of the workers and distributing it to everyone in a way that is, you know, that is equitable and meaningful to everybody scares them to death. They don't like that. It's really just a sickness born out of just being born with a silver spoon in your mouth, coupled with the type of anti-communist propaganda we've had to deal with for the last almost 100 years. It's, I don't know. I find it offensive that they want to hire more cops, especially when the Portland Street team has done far, I mean, Portland Street Response has done far more to improve the relationship between the local government and smaller communities. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
and even the
point.
Police don't like that. The police, because it actually makes police have to do their job instead of sitting around playing Candy Crush while being handed military-grade weapons. You know, I mean, I won't say that there aren't, you know, I mean, obviously you can't speak to the individuals, but even for the individuals, they are the armed arm of the state. They enforce the will, which is a capitalist, liberal, democratic state, which means it's all about protecting private property. And as long as their assets are protected, it doesn't matter what they give these police officers. As long as how many people they kill or injure, as long as private property is intact, it doesn't really matter.
Right. Well, Santiago, thank you so much for calling in and chatting with us. We appreciate it.
Santiago.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's, I absolutely, it riles me up to see, wealthy people try to crack down on like public services,
mm-hmm.
and
the
then
smallest
see the
of gains. Yeah,
the only exception being the police, which of course is the public service charged with protecting private property.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, as Santiago's pointing out, the hypocrisy of like their collective support for the police and absence of support for something like Portland Street Response, which does the kind of work that, I mean, I would hope a, like, if I was to create a police force, I would like to see them, you know, engaged in nonviolent, you know, helpful intervention to those going through, like, substance abuse and, like, mental health crises.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what that service should provide.
That's a public service.
That's a public service.
Right.
Yeah.
Folks, we are talking about, well, kind of everything we've been talking about, but we're specifically asking you what is the best time of day since it is daylight savings time this weekend.
Okay, we got from Santiago, nighttime.
Nighttime, kind of
is the right,
right
time.
Right when the sun goes down. We did get a message online from Stevie who says, quote, 3 a.m. is my favorite time of day. LOL, it's good and quiet and the art is spicy at 3 a.m. Wink. Mm. And remember, if I see you out there, no, I didn't. Thank you, Stevie. Yes. Appreciate that. We got more folks on the phone. Jeff, hi, good morning.
Good morning, it's another one of your usual suspects. Excuse me. I beg your pardon, I have a toad in my throat. I'm going to get rid of it. Okay, it's gone.
Good.
I wanted to respond to your question, of course, and I'll get to that in just a second, because I wanted to also say that, as you know, as everyone knows, your attention is the most valuable thing you possess, and that is what campaigning is all about. And campaign finance reform is all important, I'll agree. But the real scandal is not where the money comes from, but where it goes to. And it used to be three networks and a few newspapers. Now, of course, it's all kinds of social media and so forth. And that's being swallowed up by the same people who are in office buying up the media. And so your attention is what is wanted. The people who have the money to pay for the campaign are paying for your attention. And where the money goes is the issue. We have fat cats in media getting fatter by campaign funds. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's more important than ever for you as a voter or a potential voter, and I know that many don't even vote, and that's a separate issue, to guard, jealously guard your attention, because that's what they want. And the informed voter and the voter that understands that their attention is the target will cast the vote that is more wise. So guard your attention. It's the most valuable thing you've got. You may think that your bank account or your genitalia are the most valuable thing you've got. You're wrong. It is your attention. Now, as to your question, first of all, daylight savings is kind of a crock. It was invented to keep the children down on the farm and to let this whole system run smoothly, so to speak. But and if it's a popularity contest between Reed and Althea, sorry, I have yet to receive enough campaign finance to vote for either one.
Very coy of you, Jeff. Okay, but what's your favorite time?
The very best time of the day is when the sun is rising above the horizon.
Mm.
Not sinking, but rising. The dawn of a new day. Clouds or not. The dawn of the day is the time in which we now have the promise of newness and love.
Wow.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you, Jeff.
It's our first early part of the day.
Early part of the day, guys. If you want to get a hand on the ball, what is the best hour of the day?
Two for the sink from the zenith,
uh-huh.
and one for the approaching.
I feel confused about my own response to my own question, which I would have said like 1:30 p.m.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like that's got to be
you
that's
don't
actually
like 1:30?
I have no feelings about 1:30 p.m.
Okay, that's fine. No, I feel like it's maybe it's like right after lunch, but you haven't gotten sleepy from lunch yet.
The sleepy from lunch is the best part.
Okay, interesting.
Or the prospects of lunch.
Right. Lunch itself. So noon.
Post lunch departum is what I suffer from.
We have Tawasi on the line. Hi, Tawasi. Good morning.
Good morning. Team Early.
Team Early, okay.
Yeah. And the reason is that everything is fresh and new, and the whatever is in the past from the day before is gone, and your perspective is, assuming you sleep at night, is refreshed by the dawning of a new day. So specifically, the time of day that I like is the time of day when the birds wake up. Because if you're like me, you get up very early. And then it's so quiet, all you can hear is police playing Candy Crush. And then off in the far distance, there's like a breeze that's caused by the sun's rising, and there's just like this gentle pushing of warmth that precedes the break of day. Before the sun even starts to rise, there's this perceptible warmth that radiates from our yellow star, and it hits the birds differently. So you and I might just be sipping on our coffee and listening to the BBC, but the birds feel that sunlight and they start to wake up, and you can hear them way in the distance as the sun warms them very slightly, and they start to chirp and sing their morning song. And eventually, as the sun rises, that morning song creeps closer and closer until the birds that are sitting next to you wake up and begin to sing. And I love that time of day because there's nobody there. Everybody is still tucked in their blankets and have their dreams doing whatever. And then the birds wake up, and I love it. So with that in mind, there's a place in Portland that you might go by every day. Who knows? Maybe you've seen it, but I notice it every time. And it's at the Arboretum Max station. If you don't use mass transit, you would never see it because it's part of the artistic installation at the Max station. And what it shows are two inverted funnels where the tips of the funnels are touching. And it looks like two triangles with the points end to end. Mm-hmm. And between those two points is a sheet of paper or a plane. And that's a representation of perspective on time, because there's, it's all to do with physics and thought much more deep than I want to go into right here. But the idea that time is a perspective-based experience is so important, because we could be spending our time in jail right now, you know, or we could be spending our time listening to Lars Larson. You know what I mean? Like, what we do with our time and the way that we influence the world around us is so important. And I really loved what Jeff was saying about your perspective being vital in the moment. Because if you look away from what they're doing, then, you know, I'll be leaving dead drops at the northwest corner of the concentration camp so that people can find messages after they take away our cell phones and force us into detention centers. Because people like me, I have a perspective on time, and I can see into the future based on what's happened in the past. And with the building out of these detention centers, our ability to openly communicate like this will be diminished in the immediate future. And we'll have to rely on old ways of communicating that are time-based. so that I'll say, at 8 o'clock, I get in the yard. So at 8:02, you can find a message underneath the rock. But if you don't look there at 8:02, the guards are going to find it first. So, like, there's a whole different way of looking at time once you start honing in on perspective. I love Edgar Cayce's perspective on time. And obviously, having an indigenous perspective on time is really important. If you look at places like Mesa Verde or in South America, you know, the pyramids, all of this is to do with time, you know, and the powers that be abuse us through time by telling us that there's certain days and certain weeks and months and hours. When if you look at Egyptian clocks, they still run efficiently at keeping time, even though they don't agree with the Vatican. Who's to say?
Who's to say? Well, thank you, Tiwasi. We appreciate the call. I am inspired by what Tiwasi said, and usually I don't get up that early. But throw open the windows. Let's wake up on the birds' time. I'm interested in that.
You have birds around your place?
Yeah. Yeah, there's birds in my neighborhood. One time, I've told this story. One time, a crow tried to come into my house, and
did you have a big shiny thing in your living room?
No, and then I felt bad about shooing him away, and then I was leaving some stuff out, and he took it eventually. I don't know. I want to make friends with the crows, but the crow does. I would prefer if the crow did not come in the house.
Interesting.
That's where I keep all my shiny stuff that I can't possibly let go of. We have a couple minutes left.
Althea does have a lot of knickknacks, so it would literally be a crow's paradise if they came into her.
I love knickknacks. Okay, we are going to go quickly to some more callers. We've got Greg on the line. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, how you guys doing? Yeah. Listen, I'll make it short. Campaign finance reform. Here's my version. Only registered voters get to donate to their own city, their own county, their own state, and their own country. No exceptions. No corporations, no LLCs, or any of that BS. And then make the contribution amount some multiple of the minimum wage so that it ties into the ordinary folk that can't afford to donate, basically. And keep the whole level of thing down along with reforming, so less money, and then make the advertising free. The people on the airwaves have to give free time to the candidates, and then they limit it to a couple of months, you know, and make everything smaller. Just downsize everything. Just way out of hand.
Yeah, shorten the thing.
And as far as the best time of day is when you get to go sailing.
Ooh, okay. Yep. Sailing
okay,
time.
Take care, you guys.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. Greg fixed it. Nice. Easy. let's just do that. We have Barth on the line. Hi, Barth. Good morning.
Good morning. I haven't heard all of your conversation, but I've been enjoying what I have heard. When Jeff called, he said the most important thing you have is your attention. Mm-hmm. And largely true, but I would say in today's world, the most important thing you have that you can exert some control over is your information. If you are doing a lot of, you know, buying club stuff at the various stores and you're chatting back and forth and you have a big presence, then you're broadcasting a lot of information for harvest. And the harvesters are also the beneficiaries of excessive finance spending because they shape responses to go specifically to your inbox to get you to vote the way that they would like you to vote. Not everybody gets this largesse, but a lot of people do, especially in the swing states where they'll see, you know, the way you're leaning and they will make customized responses to affect your opinion and your disposition, ideally in their favor.
Thank you, Barth. We appreciate the call. I'm sorry, we just have to wrap up. We're getting to the end. But you are getting to something that I wanted to mention before we go. Next week on Genius Box, we have an interview with the founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Cindy Cohn.
Woo.
We're very excited about this. It will be
Genius data, Box interview.
Data and information and privacy related. So get excited for that.
And then the week after that, we're speaking with Lars Larson.
Yeah, Lars Larson coming is coming into the studio. On the program. No. also wanted to mention, before we go, it's International Women's Day. Cross that out. Women's Weekend this weekend. We have an entire marathon, 47 hours because of daylight savings time, starting at midnight tonight.
That's so...
They took an hour away from the women, which I think... I don't know. Just keeping an eye on that.
Well,
but tune in. There's a lot of great stuff that we have planned. You can find more information on the KBOO website.
In the fall, you should get one extra hour. A women's hour. When they do daily, you know, sailing soon.
We'll think about that in October, I guess. thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Reed.
Oh, thanks, Althea.
Thanks, Nate.
Thanks, Nate.
On the ones and twos.
Thanks to our silent third member in the Genius Box.
Yeah, who's been watching
the Spector.
Us like a crew.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO for our International Women's Day special. Oh, our International Women's Weekend Marathon. One day is not enough.